Welcome to the Dildork, Storky Discourse on Sex, Dating, and Masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I really, really hate unsolicited advice, which is why I'm trying to only give solicited advice these days. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I really fucking love giving advice because I have so many opinions about what other people should do with their lives. And I really need to practice. I'm pretty good at not giving unsolicited advice. But as soon as you let me, I will give you so much advice.
Yeah. And it really depends on your relationship, because we're best friends, like, I feel like in most cases, if I'm complaining to you about a problem, I'm open to receiving advice from you. But there are so many just, like, random strangers on Twitter who see me tweet one thing about mental illness or something and are like, oh my god, have you tried lavender oil and getting enough sleep? And I'm like, well, I've lived with this condition for over a decade, so yeah, I've thought about most of the things that you've thought about in the 10 seconds you've been considering my problem. So yep, don't like it, don't want it. But that is a rant for another day. Anyway, I bring this up because we're going to be giving solicited advice today. Which is the right way to do that.
Yes. Because for some reason, people trust us.
Yeah, people think we're smart and have good opinions, which is very exciting and gratifying. Thank you. I'm halfway into a whiskey on the rocks, and I'm already real giggly over here, so this will go well. So this is a listener questions episode. We love doing these, and I have 8 questions today from listeners who have conundrums in their lives in the areas of sex, dating, and masturbating that they thought we should weigh in on. And I think these are, like, really juicy questions that I'm really excited to get into.
Yeah, I think they're going to be really fun.
Yeah, this first one is super awkward. Listener says, I'm a straight cis male, and I've had a long-time interest in bondage and DS, but I've only started exploring it with partners I've met online over the past year or so. This is great, but my friends, who I'm fairly certain assume I'm vanilla, sometimes try to set me up with their single girlfriends. I appreciate this, but I'd only be interested in pursuing a relationship with someone who is submissive or open to exploring it. I don't know if I should tell my friends this preference so they can filter out folks who wouldn't be a good match, or should I save this discussion for that person until we've been seeing each other and sex is on the table? Either way, I'm convinced the details about my kinks are going to get spread amongst my whole circle of friends. While my kinks are fairly common, bondage, dirty talk, spanking, etc., I'm not thrilled about this info being shared. I don't think they'll be too judgy, but they will definitely be very surprised as I have a very quiet and straight-edge personality. This year, I've turned down 2 setups. When asked why, I lied and gave trivial things I didn't like about the person. I feel bad about it, and I can't keep doing this. My friends will think I'm stuck up. But the truth is that I'm just not that interested in vanilla sex. What should I do? I love this, and this is so juicy, and also part of me was like, people are still setting up their friends in 2018. Like, that's wild.
Right?
Yeah, there's some good friends, or some very bad friends, I'm not sure.
A friend of mine recently created a Facebook thread where they basically were like, comment on this thread if you want to be set up. And set all of their friends up together. And it was the most adorable thing. This thread had, like, hundreds of comments. It was so cute.
It's amazing.
And they just, like, paired everyone up.
Ugh. Cute. Okay, so my first reaction to this question is that I don't think you should tell your friends that you want them to try to set you up with kinky people. Because, first of all, that's really hard to do. Like, even if you are the kinky person looking for other kinky people to date, that can be hard in and of itself. So, like, asking someone else to do that work for you is a lot. But also, like, I don't think that your friends are going to be able to, like, know which ones of their friends are kinky. Because as you point out, like, not everybody tells their friends that stuff. So, like, I really don't think it's that helpful. I think what you can say to your friends is, like, I'm not really interested in setups anymore because my sexual tastes have changed and I'm looking for something a bit off the beaten path. Yeah, I just don't think that it would help you or your friends that much to give them that information because they're just not going to know about the sexual tastes of everyone that they're trying to set up. I've found dating while kinky to be sort of a conundrum, and in my experience, like, the best approach to take is to be upfront but not too detailed about it, because it can be a lot if, like, in your Tinder bio you're like, I'm into spanking and bondage and I only want to date people who are into that. But, like, if you can just sort of subtly mention it or allude to it, like, I have, like, one line in my Tinder bio that says that I'm kinky, and it just leaves it at that, because I figure, like, I would rather get to know someone who is open to that and, like, talk about details once we get there and, like them on a human level, then like, rule out a bunch of people off the bat who might have been open to it if they had gotten to know me, you know?
Yeah, I'm a person that, like, only has kinky sex, like, only ever have been interested in it since, like, being a kid. And I don't, like, I just have the one word kinky in my bio, and I don't, like, I get to know people a little bit, and I'll, like, mention my own sexuality in passing and see how they respond. But I don't know that I use it as, like, a disqualifier for even a first date. Like, I'll go out and hang out with someone and, like, go on a date or two. And then kind of disclose there, and because I feel like kinky, I think this is the issue I was having with this question, is, like, I feel like kinky isn't, like, a light switch. You're not just kinky or not, and you fall on one side of that and it's completely immovable. I feel like people's sexualities are more dynamic than that. So, like, if, I mean, the window of people that are going to be into dirty talk is huge, and the number of them that are going to identify as kinky is going to be a lot slimmer than that. So especially if you're feeling like your kinks are on the milder, more common side, I feel like you can filter for people more by, like, mentioning a passing interest in bondage rather than being like, you know, I am kinky TM, are you kinky TM? Like,
right. Yeah, because there are a lot of people who would be scared off by that because they don't know exactly what it means, and it could mean anything, you know? Like, I used to, when I was a baby submissive, I used to get really freaked out about dating people who identified as kinky as part of their orientation, because I was like, oh God, like, what are you into? Like, I won't be able to keep up with you. You're going to want to do things with me that I can't even approach. So, yeah, we live in an age, luckily, where kink is becoming more normalized. It's one of the few good things that came out of 50 Shades of Grey as a phenomenon, is, like, people are much more open to it now than they used to be, especially if you're living in, like, a city. And especially since you say that you're a man looking to date women. So, yeah, I think mentioning it early on and getting a read on what they say is a really great, great way to phase people out. And I also think, like, it seems like you're assuming that the people that you're getting set up with would be vanilla. And I don't think that that's necessarily a totally fair assumption. Like, I think a lot more people are kinky than we often realize. And it's totally okay to, like, realize someone is vanilla and decide to move on. But, like, don't just assume that everybody is vanilla just because you don't know otherwise, because a lot of people don't share that kind of information with their friends.
Yeah, and I think finding someone who's interested in, like, entry-level bondage and dirty talk and spanking is going to be a lot easier than I think you're giving credit for.
Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yep. I'm proud of your friends for still trying to set you up, but, like, I hope that they take no for an answer if you do decide to tell them that, because yikes.
So the next person wants to know, how do you store your toys? As my collection grows, this poses a bit of a conundrum. I don't need to be shy, but I have a small space.
Yes, so good. Toy storage is such an issue once you start owning more than 100 sex toys.
Yeah.
It's really ridiculous. The best thing that I've found is little sets of drawers, and this was recommended to me by Epiphora at heyepiphora.com. It's how she stores all of her many hundreds upon hundreds of toys.
We can get, like, plastic drawers too.
Yeah, I will. I will link it in the show notes. It's very good. I have, like, plastic drawers, and then I also have a set of metal drawers from IKEA. Just any set of, like, little drawers, because then it's easy to organize your collection so you can find things that you're looking for in a hurry if you need to, which often is important when we're talking about sex toys. And depending on the opacity of the drawers, they can be hidden out of sight or more visible, whatever you prefer.
Yeah, I also use one of those plastic drawer sets from, like, Walmart or Target or whatever. I think that's kind of the industry standard for sex bloggers. I also have some of them in, like, these cloth drawers that I got from IKEA. Mm-hmm. All just kind of piled in there. So, I know you said you don't have to be worry about secrecy. If you want to, like, display them and, you know, be weird like us, I have a wine rack on my wall that I hang them in. I've seen that. I've seen Joelle and Nadi do that, and I saw it in a James Darling porn. I don't know where I saw it first, so I'm just going to credit that idea out into the ether. I've also seen, I think it was Joellen, a spice rack with vibrators in it. One of the spinning ones.
Yeah, they look great. I have some hooks on my wall that I think are supposed to be for, like, coats or something, and I hang impact toys from them because I am a weird perv and I like to display my toys.
Yeah, so I also have a coat rack that my impact stuff hangs from. And, I've seen people use those things that are designed to hang shoes on closet doors.
Yes, I love that.
I've seen that inside of a closet. They have, on Amazon, they have, these boxes that are designed to charge, like, electronics in, so the wires come in through the back, so you can do the, I know some people that'll charge their vibrators like that if they want to have, like, one on their nightstand. We can also link to Lunabelle's post about, hiding sex toys.
Yeah,
for any listeners who do need to worry about secrecy, Luna has a really good post for that.
Yeah. My favorite, I don't really need to worry about hiding my sex toys, but my favorite toy storage stuff is by House of Plume. They make a little travel case that I love, and then they also make this, like, combination locked metal box that has a space at the back for the wires, like you said, and they're really beautiful and classy looking.
So, related, I've had a couple of people tweet at me, including Kevin from Poly Role Models, asking about toy cleaning and stuff. So, what is your toy cleaning process?
Yeah, my hot take is that toy cleaners are a scam.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just, like, full of chemicals and shit, and, like, you don't need it. I just use soap and water. You probably want to stick to, like, an unscented, gentle, pH-balanced soap product if at all possible. So I really like Diva Wash, which is made by the people who make the Diva Cup, and also Dr. Bronner's soaps. Just make sure you rinse really well, obviously. And don't use those on toys that are not waterproof, of course. You can also use a 10% bleach solution on certain types of toys, and
we've been known to just leave a bleach bowl at events.
Just the communal bleach bowl. You know a sex blogger party is happening when there's a communal bleach bowl. For toys that don't have any, like, mechanical parts, and that are waterproof,
obviously wash them after they come out of the bleach bowl. I just want to make sure that we note that.
Yeah, please don't put bleach in your bits. Yeah. I will link to a post that explains this stuff better than we're going to, because we are not science heavy. That's not really our jam. But yeah, check out the show notes at thedildorks.com for some links. You can throw non-mechanical waterproof toys into a pot of boiling water for a few minutes to disinfect them. And you can also put them in the top rack of a dishwasher. No soap, just water.
I keep a thing of baby wipes next to my bed, which is good for, like, cleaning up after sex stuff, but also good for just kind of wiping my toys down if I'm not going to clean them right away. Like, if I'm about to fall asleep or whatever, I can wipe them down, toss them to the side, and then wash them later.
Yeah, there are lots of companies who make wipes that are made specifically for cleaning sex toys, like Aftercourse, I know, is one of them. But a lot of times they have no particular benefit over just regular baby wipes, and it's all kind of marketing, so, yeah.
Yeah, and I've found, like, baby wipes and stuff leave fuzzies all over the toy, so, like, it cleans it, but not well enough to put it back in your bits.
I use them a lot if I'm gonna, like, take a picture of the toy and I just don't want to wash it.
Yeah.
Sex blogger life. We got a couple of questions around the same theme, so I put them together. They're both about platonic spanking, which, you know, is in our wheelhouse. We've been known to partake of that.
Yes.
Yes, we have. This person said in episode 3 about kink, Bex mentioned a party where people were spanking him, but platonically. This confused me because in my mind that sort of stuff is always sexual, but I'm not into it myself, so I really have no idea. Could you explain?
Yeah, so for some people, kink is always sexual. For some people, kink is always platonic. And for some people, it kind of goes somewhere in between. There are kinks that I derive a lot of pleasure from, and it's not necessarily sexy pleasure because it's not necessarily in a sexy context. Like, yeah. I enjoy the thrill of being hit and the feeling of accomplishing something and, like, this adrenaline rush that comes with fear sometimes. And all of those feelings are really fun for me, but they don't necessarily turn me on. Sometimes they do, and sometimes if it's in a context where I'm enduring pain for someone that I'm also super attracted to, or they're also super close to me and touching me and everything while they're hitting me, then yeah, it becomes a sexual thing.
The sex writer Emily Nagoski, who wrote the book Come As You Are, talks a lot about the importance of context and its role in arousal. And I found that to be really true because if the context is just not one that I would feel safe or comfortable getting aroused in, then often I just don't. So that would include certain platonic kink situations with friends. And like you said, some kink stuff can be sort of like exhilarating and exciting in a way that does not have to be sexual. As evidenced by a study I referenced last week that I read recently that showed that a lot of asexual folks are interested in kink and BDSM, which of course would probably be for non-sexual reasons. Really fascinating. I will say that like my feelings on this personally have really ebbed and flowed over the course of time. And currently I'm not feeling great about engaging in kink as a bottom with people other than romantic partners, because I'm noticing that often when I do that lately, it makes me really emotional and it sometimes makes me like burst into tears. And that's not always something that I feel super safe doing with just like friends. Depends on the friend, of course. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now. I had a former spanking buddy reached out to me recently to see if I wanted to kind of pick that back up again, and I said, like, respectfully, I'm gonna say no right now because I'm just not feeling great about platonic kink at the moment. And he was fortunately really cool about it. But yeah, some people like it, some people don't. Some people like it at certain times and under certain conditions, and that's totally fine.
Yeah, I'm really slutty about platonic kink. Like, I fucking love it. Like, with 90% of people, I'm like, yeah, sure, hit me, great, let's do a thing. But I bottom for platonic kink. I don't submit. Like, I'm real salty about subbing, like, full stop right now. But, like, I don't submit in platonic kink stuff, because that's way more emotionally charged. But I'll bottom to, like, everyone.
Yeah, you're differentiating there between bottoming as sort of, like, a more physical act versus submitting as, like, a more psychological or emotional act. And yeah, I differentiate between those things too. I do find I'm like much more willing to do platonic kink as a top lately. And I think it's because I stay more in control of my faculties and I don't have as much of an emotional response to it. So I feel safer doing it with people who I don't feel quite as comfortable with or intimate with. But of course, yeah, your mileage may vary as always.
Yeah.
Okay. A second question about platonic kink. I think this question was from a woman, but I'm not sure. They said, a friend and I have always had a flirty relationship, but didn't really talk much about our sex lives. We went to a sex shop recently, and she pointed to the kink section and bashfully said she was sort of kinda interested in that. So we went over and talked about it. She was interested in the impact toys and bondage stuff, but from the top side of things. So my question here is there a way for us to play in a mutually beneficial way to relieve stress? Yes, there is.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Have you heard of platonic kink?
Yes. Let us introduce you to platonic kink. Also, like, you do mention that you've had sort of a flirty relationship. So, like, maybe it isn't going to be platonic, but maybe you're really asking more about, like, can you do sexy or kinky things with this person without, like, ruining your friendship, which you probably can. I think what's really important and what I've learned from having, like, friend with benefits relationships go very wrong and very right is, like, the need to really communicate quite clearly, like, your boundaries and your expectations and your feelings about this stuff before you get into it, and also continually as you're, like, continuing to do it. Because if one person is seeing it more on, like, the romantic side of the things, and another person is much more, like, platonic or detached about it, like, that can be a painful disconnect, and that can cause some stress and some tension. So you want to talk about, like, what you're expecting from each other and, like, what you're hoping to get out of it and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and, like, be really honest with yourself, too, because the only, like, the friends with benefits stuff that has worked for me is stuff where I genuinely had, like, no interest beyond friendship with them. Mm-hmm. And, like, recognizing that in yourself and, like, not trying to do friends with benefits if you want something that isn't just friends, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, like, your feelings about that might change. That's definitely happened to me, yeah. And it's been really painful. Because there's sometimes an expectation that, like, if you establish that things are okay off the top of the relationship, that things are going to continue to be okay. And that's usually not the case. You usually have to kind of keep checking in about that stuff and making sure the stuff is still feeling good for everybody involved.
Yeah.
I would also say for consent purposes as well as for emotional purposes, it's good to lay out really clearly what you will and will not do with this person. So my spanking buddy who I talked about earlier, we initially tried doing sex things together as well, but we eventually just mutually decided that they weren't that great, and, like, the thing that we really wanted to do together was just spanking. So we explicitly agreed on that, and I was really happy that we had that conversation, because up to that point, I was, like, stressing so much about, like, is he mad that I don't want to have sex with him more often, or, like, is he, you know, frustrated that the sex is bad or whatever. And when we actually talked about it, it turned out that we both just wanted the spanking to be the thing that we were doing. I have another friend with benefits type of person who I only do rope bondage with, and that was, again, after, like, having a really clear conversation that that was what we wanted to do. So it can really, like, take a lot of stress off both of you if you lay out that stuff really, really clearly.
Yeah. This next person says, I have a question about polyamory. I'm married and polyamorous. It's relatively new for us, but was a well-informed and mutual decision. We're really happy. We're both feeling rock solid and communicating well right now. The only problem is my sister and mom, who I'm very close with, are very concerned. And my phone turned off. There we go. They are making huge assumptions, worrying I'll lose my primary partner or that we're being rash or not communicating. I want to help educate them, but it's exhausting. My sister has this idea that poly never works. I feel really hurt, condescended to, and frustrated. I don't know how to educate her. Any tips or resources?
Yeah, relatable. I've been through this a lot. One thing I have found is helpful for folks. I don't know if this would work in your situation, but I've often found it helpful to be like, do you know how many monogamous relationships don't work out? Like, and besides which, like, a relationship ending does not necessarily mean it failed or didn't work. Like, there are lots of reasons a relationship can end. But that aside, I often find that when people think about, like, the fact that a lot of monogamous relationships end, it helps them put in perspective the fact that, like, poly relationships can end too. It doesn't mean that poly is, like, a failed relationship method, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I'm also going to recommend you read a book called It's Called Polyamory. It's by Rebecca Hiles and Tamara Pincus, and it's all about coming out as polyamorous, so that's going to have a lot of really tangible advice in there for you as well. Mm-hmm. Another really great book on polyamory is called Building Open Relationships by Dr. Liz Powell. Their book is fantastic. I recommend you read it, but also for anyone looking to, like, learn more about polyamory for a perspective of how does this work? Like, if you think they would benefit from learning more about how to have polyamorous relationships, you can recommend that book to them so they can learn a little bit more about just what the experience of polyamory is.
Yeah, and we also should shout out our friend Kevin Patterson at Poly Role Models, who's been chronicling on his blog for a long time the lives of poly people and their struggles and what they love about it and stuff. And it's these very, like, candid enlightening interviews with lots of different poly people who are doing it lots of different ways. I found it helpful before I was really identifying as poly, and I found it helpful since then. So that might be a good way for them to get some perspective on like what it can be like to be as a be a poly person, and like that it doesn't always have to end in disaster.
Yeah.
I've said this before too, but like specifically when you're trying to talk to parents about poly, like my mom has often brought up the question of like, well, which one of your partners do you like better? And someone on Twitter recommended that I ask her, which one of your kids do you like better? Because like, which sounds like an attack, but what it actually does is it helps kind of reframe that in a parent's mind potentially, to help them understand that like love does not have to be a finite resource and does not have to be directed at only one person. And that can be kind of like an epiphany for some folks. This one, I'm a little, a little concerned about this one. Okay, next question. This person said, is it wrong for me, a bi-curious male that is primarily dominant, to enjoy having my wife be in a submissive role and use an anal toy or plug on me?
No.
No, it is not wrong.
You can do that.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of times I get questions from dudes. The question is phrased like, is it wrong or is it weird? And I feel like they often just sort of want to like talk about their fantasy, and it's kind of, I don't know if that's this person's deal, but like that's how I take it. But I also understand that like a lot of the questions you get as a sex educator are just like, is it weird that I do or feel this thing? And a big part of our job is being like, no, it's not weird. Because like so many people think that they're so weird because of some sex thing that they're into, and like these things are so much more common than most people realize.
Yeah, like that's super normal, not really weird.
Yeah. And on the topic specifically of, like, using an anal toy on a dominant person, I've actually done this a lot. I actually have only pegged two people, and both people were my dominant at the time, which I used to think would be kind of weird, and I couldn't really fathom how that would work. But once I was actually in the moment, it was very fun, and it was very natural, because you can think of it sort of as like service topping in a way, where like you're giving this person a pleasurable experience that they want because they're in charge and the scene is oriented around their pleasure in this moment. And they can kind of like boss you around and tell you how to fuck them the way that they want. You can even like attach a leash or something to your, to a collar so that they can pull you into them, or like they can pull on the harness, or they can like pull your hair while you're fucking them with a toy or whatever. Like there's a lot of ways that you can take control as a dominant person receiving. And that doesn't have to be at odds with your dominant identity at all.
Yeah. So this is a question from a 26-year-old straight cis guy. I like to dance, but whenever I go out, it feels like everyone on the dance floor is just grinding. To paint a picture, not that I need to, you've probably seen it, it's usually women rubbing their cheeks on men's D's and the men reciprocating with what objectively looks like groping. Just pause to say that's my favorite description of grinding ever. Just cheeks on D's.
Cheeks on D's all day long.
Sorry. Anyway, I'd much rather dance facing each other, where at least able to look at each other's faces. Whenever I find myself in the aforementioned situation, I don't want to grope or otherwise overstep the bounds of someone I don't even know, but I feel like that's what's expected of me, which is reinforced when they quickly seem to lose interest and move on. I'm not sure what the best way to remedy conflict between what I enjoy and what I feel is right with what's expected of me.
I find this this question so interesting from, like, a sex educator perspective, because, like, how do you do a consent negotiation in a space where it's so loud and you can't hear or understand each other? There are ways, because getting consent non-verbally is totally a thing, and also you can probably still say stuff. But, yeah, this is like, you know, we're having so many conversations lately in our culture about consent culture, and there's a lot of emphasis on the verbal side of things, but that's not the only way to establish consent, and I think that there needs to be more conversations about that. Obviously, clear verbal consent is, like, the gold standard and the ideal, but, like, it's not realistic in every single situation.
Yeah, I also think touch-first consent is a thing, especially in gay male culture. Like,
yeah,
that, and it's a thing that works in certain, like, contexts. When you walk into a bathhouse, that's the contract you're kind of agreeing to, is this concept of touch first consent. No means no, not necessarily yes means yes. And I feel like that's kind of the context he's working in, walking into in the club, right? Mm-hmm. It's a context of, this is how we dance here, and this is what we do. And that doesn't mean that you have to be chill with them doing it, but also there's this code in the area. So I would honestly suggest going to a different context. So, like, I get that going out a lot of times is going out with a bunch of friends, so you may need to learn to, you know, just if you're clear about not wanting to be touched, if you're, like, avoiding the dance floor, going on to the dance floor with specific people who you've already talked to about how you're gonna dance. Not necessarily, like, sitting and down and writing everything out, but being like, hey, I'd like to dance this way. Those are things you can do if you're going to this place with friends. But if you're just going out cruising on your own, or going out and can kind of bring some friends with you, consider going to, like, clubs for a certain style of dance, or going to dance classes to learn a style of dance where you're inherently facing each other. I don't know enough about dancing to, like, rattle off names. But look into that rather than necessarily the, like, popular clubs.
I also think if you're worried about consent, like, a lot of what we learn about nonverbal consent in sex can also apply to this situation, where it's sort of like, start slow, ramp up gradually, keep an eye on them, check in, you know, don't go right to grabbing someone's tits or whatever. Like, that's not how you do that on the dance floor or in sex. You know, if you start by, like, putting your hands on someone's hips, that's, like, fairly, like, standard in, like, dancing, and, you know, pay attention to their face and watch what happens when you kind of move your hands to different areas. I think that it, like you were saying, Bex, like, it is kind of a weird situation for consent, because the rules are a little bit shifted just because of, like, the context that you're walking into. But I do think that, like, using a sort of sexual consent framework is helpful, and that doesn't always mean checking in verbally about every single thing that you want to do.
Yeah, and I think, like, a lot of this advice is operating from a premise where this person doesn't want to do these things because they feel like they don't have consent, versus this person not wanting to do things because he's uncomfortable doing them, which, yeah, like, super valid if you're uncomfortable doing them and it doesn't feel good for you, because you just don't feel comfortable being this close to someone you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Super fine. Just maybe don't go dancing where that's the social context.
Yeah, and, like, especially if you live in, like, a place that's not a big city, you might have to, like, travel a little bit farther to find a dancing environment that jives more with you, but it might be worth it for you to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. I love this one. This one's very up my alley. This person says, I've always been the good girl teacher's pet. Something awful has happened. I've developed the biggest crush on one of my professors. He gives me so many kink feels and daddy feels. He gives mad eye contact, like stares into you, is so thoroughly interested and passionate about his subject, and has taken so much time outside of class to talk to me and even to ask me what I think about his teaching. I leave class dizzy and unable to think straight. It's so bad, guys. I feel like if anyone can relate and have advice, it would be Kate, though obviously I want Bex's opinion too. This person listens to our show quite closely, clearly.
Yeah.
I still have over 3 months in his class left, and I would like to function like a normal human. I've literally never had emotions this extreme about anyone, so it has me a bit shook. What should I do?
Kate, did you write this question?
I didn't. But I could have. I really could have. Oh my god, yeah. I had a professor who taught psychology when I was in university, who I called Prof Hot Dad, which incidentally the acronym is PhD. But But yeah, like, I often would find myself, like, so distracted by my feelings about him that I found it difficult to, like, follow along. And he would sometimes use examples, like, especially in, like, the developmental psych unit, where he was, like, saying stuff about, like, daddies and little girls, where I was just having, like, extreme kink feelings. And, like, not trying to, but I just had to, like, take a moment and, like, breathe. A couple times I did have to kind of, like, leave the classroom and, like, go to the washroom and, like, have some water and just kind of chill out, because my heart was beating really fast and it was an issue. So I feel you.
I would just say just kind of, like, acknowledging the feelings that you're having to yourself. And, mm-hmm. like, it's, like, mindfulness crap. But the idea of just accepting that, well, I'm having a kink feeling now. This is happening. I guess this is just going through me for a minute. Okay. Rather than trying to be like, oh, God, don't think about that right now. Focus on this. We're trying to learn things or whatever.
Yeah.
I think just accepting that, oh, well, this is a feeling I'm having for a minute. Okay.
Yeah. I have had crushes on so many teachers and professors that I've gone through, like, all kind of the different iterations of how this can go. And sometimes it goes in this really dark direction where you start to get genuinely, like, kind of sad and upset that you can't date this person or be with this person. And what I've found is that it's much more helpful to try to orient yourself around the thought that, like, being around someone you have a crush on is a good feeling. It's a positive, exciting feeling, and it can, like, fuel you for the rest of your day or the rest of your week. Like, I often had a hard time in school because of, like, seasonal depression and, like, a bunch of other stuff. So, like, if I had one thing that felt motivating for me to get to school, that was, like, a really bright spot in my week. So, like, I tried to look at it that way instead of being like, why doesn't he want to date me? Which is a weird thought to have about your professor. I also think, like, you say you're a good girl and a teacher's pet, so if you're concerned about your academic performance being affected by being so distracted in class, like, you can kind of, like, harness those feelings to some extent and try to use them to, like, get better grades and feel motivated to work hard for this person, which actually is, like, kind of a blessing. Like, I've had so many teachers who I didn't care about the teacher or about the class, and so, like, I didn't do as well in the class as I could have or should have because I just didn't give a fuck. But, like, when you have, like, good girl feelings about your professor, maybe you will give a fuck and maybe you'll get a great grade. One last thing that I found helpful sometimes in these cases is if I'm obsessed with someone or something, sometimes I just need to get all the thoughts out. So I'll, like, set a timer for, like, an hour and sit down with my journal and just write, like, every single thing, like, everything I love about the person, every fantasy I have about them, all my, like, fears and insecurities and everything, like, everything related to this person or this obsession, and try to just kind of get them out. Because if you don't do that, sometimes they can just, like, circle in your brain and be really distracting and make you feel disoriented going about your day. I find it really helpful to kind of get them all out there.
Sure, yeah. I don't have unrequited love advice. Mm-hmm. I like too few people. I've learned that about myself.
I love the ways that we're different and also the ways we're the same.
Yeah.
I treasure your friendship.
This is the thing I've realized more and more over the past few months. I have, like, two crushes a year.
Yep. I think sometimes it's, like, related to my hypomania for me. Like, my brain just, like, latches onto a thing and is like, this is the thing that will make your life better and perfect. And for me, it's often romantic stuff. And I've kind of had to, like, examine, like, in therapy and in journaling and stuff, like, that's not always super positive for me, but there are ways it can be positive. Like, it can get you a great grade in your psych class. So, you know, try to find the silver linings. Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of the Dildorks. We do like to do these listener question episodes occasionally, so if you do want to send in a question for us to answer sometime, our email address is, as ever, thedildorks@gmail.com.
These are my favorite.
Please, they're so fun. I've been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where's your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find me at bextalksex.com for all the details on my workshops and my writing and all that stuff. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at bextalksex. Together we're the Dildorks. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Dildorks. And you can find us at thedildorks.com. You can also find us by searching The Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us. It makes us easier for other sex nerds to find.
Thank you so much to Protodome for letting us use his song, I Want You in My Bedroom, as our theme song. All of his music is at protodome.bandcamp.com. And thank you to Amy, who did our logo for us. She is at starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye. Bye.
Oh God, stay tuned, folks. The bloopers are wild.
Babe, are you recording? You're not getting any of these bloops.
I'm sorry, I'm recording now. All of the bloops can happen again.
No, they can't.
We will have new bloops.
That's unrepeatable. It's just lost to time.
So sad. I'm not sure I want that on internet record anyway. We don't need record of how disgusting we are.
Okay. Let the record show we're not disgusting at all.
We're just secretly disgusting. The notes in the chart were like states or like city and state for anywhere in the states, and then it was just Canada. I was like, I'm just dropping a marker on this map in Canada.
Like, a pretty big place.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Classic.
Fucking Americans, am I right?
Truly. It's so funny. I have American friends who will be like, do you know my friend? She lives in Vancouver. And I'm like, why would I know your friend from Vancouver? I've never been there.
That's when people are like, oh, do you know this other trans person? Like, and I'm always so offended. Like, fuck you. Yeah, actually, I do. But, like, because, like, yeah. I always do fucking know them, but still.
In, like, sex writer culture, they'll be like, oh, have you ever heard of, like, this very famous sex writer? And I'm like, yes, and I hate them, and let me tell you why. It's just, it always gets exactly so dark so quickly.
I was gonna call them out, and then you went, and I hate them, and I went, oh, that's why we're not saying names. Because even though we're not recording, this needs to be bloop ready content. This show's just all bloopers.
I'm gonna start calling alcohol blooperkint.
I literally just dropped fucking pipe out of my mouth. It's on the floor now, Kate.
Amazing. I made you laugh with a pun. That never happens.
I know. This is really good weed.
Also, I'm very funny. Let's just credit where credit is due.
I love that beforehand, we're like, we do all this gross shit, and now we're like, perfect sex toy retail, like, rattling off the, here are your options.
That's how we do stuff. Do as I say and not as I do, always.
Sex educator life.
Use more lube, except sometimes I like to not use lube because I'm into that rough sex feel. It's fine, don't worry about it. Oh, God.
I've wanted to write a thing that's like, you know, 5 ways I'm a terrible sex educator.
Please do it. You're the person to do that. You're the bad boy of sex educators.
I was going to say, I love this image of me that you have. Like, does not give a fuck.
You just, like, rock up to the sex ed convention in, like, your leather jacket and leather boots and, like, throw a cigarette on the ground. You're like, what did I miss? that's you. And everybody's yeah. like, oh my god, everything, so much drama, and you're like, whatever, I'm here to learn. I love it.
That was a weirdly sexy bye.
I didn't do it on purpose.
It was all like breathy and shit.
I'm sorry? I don't know.